We've heard so much of the tragedy and the trauma of 9/11. Let's now meet a woman who was at the centre of one of the most uplifting stories to come out of that terrible day, now 20 years past. Diane Davis was a school teacher in a town called Gander. That town, it's on Newfoundland Island. This is the most easterly part of Canada, therefore, of the whole of North America. And on that morning, the 11th of September 2001, she was teaching French to her year three class when one of the parents came to the school and told Diane what had just happened in New York. There were no televisions in the classroom. No one had mobile phones. By the lunch break, it was understood that the people of Gander were going to have to start preparing for a few visitors, quite a few visitors. Diane's now a retired school teacher, still a resident of Gander, and she joins us now. Diane, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Before we get to your most remarkable story, Diane, can you just tell us a bit about Gander? Paint a picture of the town for us.
Well, you did a really good job, a really good summary. Gander, at the time, had a population of around 9,000 people, but it was actually formed pre-World War II around an air base. So we had a very, people say it's a very large airport. We have a small airport with very large runways. the Concorde could land here for emergency stops and did. So we have a small airport with huge runways, and we're often an emergency stop. When I moved to Gander 35 years ago, we had flights from Cuba and Moscow regularly on refueling because they couldn't land in America because of the politics. Then the technology changed and they could overfly us. So our airport has not been in the forefront that it was even 30 years ago until September 11th.
Well, let's go back to that day. And your experience, can you remember where you were when you heard about the terror attack?
Yes, I was teaching because our support staff was on strike. Parents were dropping the children off. The bus drivers were on strike. So children were coming in haphazardly. Didn't matter that they were given a time. The parents were doing it at their convenience. So we kept checking in the hallway to see if there was any more kids coming. And around 10 o'clock, a mom came and said, "A plane just hit the Twin Towers. I'm here to get my son." I saw the two statements as being totally unrelated. And a few minutes later, a second mom came in and said, "The second plane just hit. I want my children now." And that was the realization.
What were you thinking? I mean, this slow realization is something absolutely extraordinary.
I guess I thought attack. I really don't remember. I just remember the realization that it was no longer the accident that I thought a few minutes previously. And I was years telling that story before I realized that those women would have probably had connection to air traffic control in Gander. Uh-huh. And were not just removing their kids from school. They were probably removing their children from the community, worried about who or what might be on the aircraft that were landing here already.
Because, and this is the situation across the United States at that point, I mean, anything related to air travel was in a state of extreme anxiety, and alerts would have been traveling through that network at great pace.
Absolutely. And what happened was aircraft that were flying transatlantic, anything that had not met the midpoint, say coming from Europe, would have been sent back. Mm-hmm. But anything that was on our side of the midpoint of the Atlantic came to Canada. Canada really wasn't given a choice. We did accept the aircraft, but, you know, the other option was to not let them land anywhere, and you couldn't do that. But Gander was in receipt of 38 passenger planes by the time the day ended, actually by mid-afternoon, because most of them were in flight when everything happened.
So how did word get out that Gander was about to become this place of refuge, that there were so many aircraft heading your way?
It was the old-fashioned telephone tray. We had, in social committee at school, we had a list of people. I phoned five people, they phoned five people, and it carries out like that. And the same thing happened in the church organizations, in the service groups, in the various towns, of course. They were in communication with emergency measures, and there were official communications going on. But in the school, we were just responding to what we thought needed to be done. So the first and only task that I was given by the town was to stack furniture at the high school. I was told to phone to take eight people and no more. So I phoned six people, picked up my stepdaughter, Lisa, and we went to the school, and there were 20 of us because everyone phoned a buddy and said, I've got a job.
Yep.
We stacked furniture in two schools. And as we did that, we talked about computers and realized that computers should be left in the forefront in case people had email. This was 20 years ago.
So you were clearing space, basically, with the
stacking. Clearing floor space for people to sleep. When we got back to Gander Academy, our school, it was about 8:30 p.m. There was 100 volunteers in the building. Food and bedding was coming in steadily. The floors were cleared. The furniture was stacked. And I went around writing usernames and passwords on all of the computer monitors in the school so that if they knew how to access their email, if they had email and they knew how to access it, they could get through our network to do that. Our first buses arrived after midnight because, again, our bus drivers, we don't have
they were on strike.
Public transport. Our bus drivers, our school bus drivers, came off strike to transport these passengers. And buses went nonstop all night long and transported 7,000 people from the airport to various locations in Gander, Appleton, Glenwood, Lewisport, Norris Arm, and Gambo. And the other communities that I named besides Gander are all much smaller than Gander, and they actually housed more than half of the passengers between them.
So you've got 7,000 people stumbling bleary-eyed off international flights, absolutely no idea where they are, no access to their luggage, no idea really what is going on. What an extraordinary and bemused tide of humanity that must have been.
It was incredible. It's my understanding that there were 98 countries represented by the passports that were presented. There were people, cardiologists from all over the world on the way to a World Cardiology Convention. There were people who had just adopted children and were afraid if their flight got sent back, they wouldn't get them out of the country again. There were people who were refugees. There were people who were mayors of major cities in Europe. We had everything that you could imagine in humanity. We had every age, we had every color, we had every religion, we had languages like Moldovan, who speaks Moldovan. We had, because I'm bilingual, I could eavesdrop on the French-speaking passengers. We had a flight from Belgium at Gander Academy. And one lady phoned home to Monaco and told them in Monaco about les gâteaux de grand-mère, the grandmother cakes and cookies and the baking that the Newfoundland people were giving the passengers. And she boasted about these beautiful recipes, and she didn't think that people still knew how to cook like that.
Let's talk about that because, okay, we've cleared some space in schools. Gander has, I think that it's about 500 hotel rooms, so...
Yeah, there weren't enough hotel rooms in Gander to actually hold all the flight crews. They actually had to bus flight crews to Grand Falls, Windsor, which is the next community more than an hour away that would have proper hotels.
So every bit of floor space in Gander is being swung into this purpose, and these people need to be fed. How is that arranged?
initially, it came from houses. It came, people were making sandwiches and soups and, you know, whatever their funeral recipe was, that when somebody dies at church, this is what I always take. And it just kept expanding out. But the remarkable thing is that surrounding communities who realized how big this task was through their service groups, through their churches, through their dioceses and their parishes, communities 2 hours away were cooking and sending truckloads of food to Gander. After a day or so, the Salvation Army was put in charge of getting the food supply. And they actually commandeered, we live on an island, they commandeered produce trucks that were in the lineup to come to Newfoundland because our population had doubled and we had no vegetables. And it's truly remarkable the things that happened that made all of this work. And it was because everyone was able to do something within their means that contributed to this huge wave of humanity and kindness.
How long were people there?
The planes landed on Tuesday during the morning, our time, because we're behind you. And our last flight left Gander Academy. It was Virgin 21. It was a London to Dulles, Washington flight. It left on Saturday morning. So we taught all day. Passengers arrived Wednesday night. They were there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights.
Well, as a grade three teacher, I guess you will have expected, and this must have happened, that some people would have become rather upset at their predicament and wanted to leave. What were you telling those people?
It's not easy to get out of Newfoundland, especially if you closed all the airspace. There was a lovely young couple from America who were traveling back from Italy and left me a great bottle of wine. And they said, we don't want to leave this to fate. How do we get out of here? And there really is only one way. You take a taxi to the Goose, which is a restaurant service station outside of Gander. And then you get the bus to Port-au-Basque. You get a ferry to Nova Scotia, which is the next province. And you take a bus across Nova Scotia. And then you get a ferry that would take you to Bangor, Maine, which is the point of contact in America, in USA. And that would take you about probably 24 hours nonstop if you got all the connections just right. So there was no easy way out. People were trying to rent cars. There was that was shut down because there was concern if there was terrorists, they may try to leave. So they stopped the car rentals. But I was told by police officers afterwards that they found rental cars all over the place, that people finally just gave up and, you know, got somebody to give them a ride back when they finally realized we can't get there from here. Wherever you are going, you can't get there from here. Not right now.
So there you are with this vast body of people, and they're being fed, they are being accommodated. How did you keep their spirits up? Were there activities organized?
We had beautiful, beautiful, warm, sunny weather, which was very fortunate. People could get out for walks, get some fresh air. They'd come back and they would complain. They said, we tried to go for a walk and, you know, every 100 meters, a car would stop and ask us if we needed a ride. And we couldn't get anywhere because these people kept asking us if we needed a ride.
Too nice.
Which was fun. Yeah, it was fun. A few of the school teachers had a pickup country folk band. And, you know, they showed up with their microphones and their amps and their guitars. And they would do a set outside the school on the lawn, and people just kind of laid around in the grass and listened to the music and relaxed. And then they would move off to another school and do the same thing there.
And then here is the punchline to this entire tale, that in time it would be turned into a musical.
Who knew? It's remarkable. When we were interviewed by David Hine and Irene Carl Sankoff, a young married couple, we told our stories because it was the 10th anniversary and we were having all these recollections that we needed really to talk about and share.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, I said, so what is it you're researching? And David said, we're writing a musical. And I won't bother apologizing again, but you can imagine what went through my head. And 5 years later, they bring this musical to Gander. It was only the night before I saw the show in Gander that I found out that the character of Beulah Cooper, who's a volunteer at the Legion, was now Beulah Davis, a bit of a saucy school teacher at Gander Academy. And this actress looks at me and says, you know, I play you, right? So that's been a trip. Not only is it turned into a musical, it's an award-winning musical. And as representatives of our community, and just because I'm a very lucky woman, they have flown us, the people who are by name in the musical represented on stage, they have flown us to openings in Toronto, New York, London, and this great place called Melbourne, Australia.
Must have been the highlight. I had
a ball in Melbourne, Australia. We really enjoyed ourselves, and we were there for, I think, 8 days. It was very busy. Every time they add a couple days onto a come from away trip, we realize how much more press we're going to be doing. But we had a royal treatment in Melbourne, Australia, right down to a beautiful suite to watch my first and only ever Aussie football game. Go Tigers.
A very important cultural moment. And of course, Come From Away is the show that we're talking about. And now you know, dear listener, the full and extraordinary backstory. Diane, thank you so much for talking us through that on this, well, this anniversary must have reawakened a lot of memories 20 years ago.
It is, and we're very cognizant of the good that we were able to do on those days for the people who landed here, but we're also very aware of the first responders and the families and the survivors in the various locations. We often talk about New York, but in the other locations, and realize that this is a very difficult anniversary for them.
Diane, thank you so much. Diane Davis, she's a retired school teacher, but 2001, a member of the Gander community in Newfoundland that housed 7,000 air traveling tourists.